The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Give us feedback on this podcast or ask tech questions by calling the voicemail hotline at 877-414-5856. That's 877-414-5856 to get your questions answered.
Hey folks, welcome to the show. This is Chris Perillo, host of the Chris Perillo Show, of all people. You know, imagine that. You know, it's such a surprise. You know, Chris Perillo being the host of the Chris Perillo Show. We're here for another week, and we're encroaching upon our year anniversary. I can't believe it's already been a year. So many shows under our belt, of course. All of them on the ChrisPerilloShow.com. And for an entire year, we've been sponsored by Microsoft. Of course, Microsoft Windows Media. And that's the way the stream's going out over Limelight Networks, the wonderful sponsor of our stream. Tonight, it's going to be, well, I don't know if it's going to be as exciting. It's going to be exciting in a different way as it was last week. Of course, we had Major Nelson on, and we've uploaded all 3 hours of that to the website, which, of course, you can download right now. Tonight, I brought over, I didn't really have to do much coaxing for him to come over, but Robert Scoble will be here, Microsoft superstar, blogger, who I've known for many, many, many years, long before he was at Microsoft, and also Liz Lawley, who I have come to know and love over the years. I first started reading her blog when she was still on the other side of the country, in Rochester, New York, at a university. New York? Syracuse?
Rochester Institute of Technology.
There you go, RIT. And she's actually working at Microsoft for a year, and she's going to be filling us in on those details. And she's a very outspoken individual when it comes to technology, and specifically women's roles in technology. And she's also a part author, or I guess a blog publisher, at misbehaving.net. And, of course, she blogs at mamasmusings.net. She is a mother herself. And she's also bringing, I believe, her entire family, including her son, Lane, who's got a website. And hopefully we'll be able to speak with him as well. And this website that he's built is kind of a, what is it, Things That I Want? Things That I Want to Get? I can't remember the exact name of it at this point in time. But it's a project that he's been working on pretty happily. And so when we were having dinner the other night, I mentioned that, hey, you know, would you want to stop over for the show, maybe? Because we were talking about our wonderful big screen TV that we have in the other room and the Xbox 360, and we were extending this invite specifically to Liz Lawley and her family, and Robert Scoble piped up, and he says, yeah, I'm there. It's not much, it doesn't take much to get anybody to come into this house anymore, because once you have an Xbox 360, anything goes. I mean, you could say, hey, does anybody want to come over here and help me clean up? People will want to come over to your house. They want to come over to your house specifically because you have an Xbox 360. They're your best friend because you have an Xbox 360. Nobody can get a hold of an Xbox 360, or I guess few people can. And the people that do have a hold of the Xbox 360, you never see them again. They're your friends, sure, but you never see them again anymore, unfortunately, which is, you know, kind of sad, you know, on one hand. But on the other hand, it's kind of nice because, you know, friends can get, you know, old after a while, and, you know, they start wearing on your patience. Like, we were supposed to prepare for the show an hour early because Jay came over here because of traffic in Seattle. He was here, I kid you not, he was here at 1 in the afternoon. 1 in the afternoon, like 5 hours before we needed to do this. He said, oh, I wanted to be the traffic is horse. And I agree. The traffic in Seattle around this time of year is bad. But he said, yeah, I wanted to make sure I got here. And so how's that Xbox 360? I guess good, Jake. So, well, you know, I didn't get a chance to play last week. All right, fine.
Hey,
so,
you know, you got to stop complaining because you know how much of Project Gotham I finished
for
you today?
Hey, I'm not complaining. I am very appreciative of the fact that you did complete a couple of levels because I just haven't had time to play with the Xbox as of late, which is kind of sad. But what's kind of happy is we've already got our first caller. Jason!
Hey, what's up?
Mr. Calacanis, the billionaire.
You know, it's crazy. I have four of these Xbox here. I got two from Microsoft as presents from people, and then I got two from other people at AOL, and I haven't even opened them yet. I'm just like looking at them for the past 3 weeks.
Hey, if you send me one, I'll send you some money.
I had no idea that this was such a big deal. I got four of them here, and I just figured it was like whatever. What should I do with these things? Put them on eBay? How much are they worth?
Oh, you could probably score $1,000 easily for one of them.
Really? Because they sent me the one with the hard drive and all that stuff,
yep.
And faceplates, and
$1,000 easily.
Really? I got $4,000 sitting here. I don't have any of them. Are you kidding me? If I had it, would I be on the phone with you guys? No.
No, nobody would. Right, that, that's the great thing is that I can hold this over people's heads.
But I just got an Apple, I just got a, you know, AOL's like, hey, welcome to the company. Can we get you anything? I was like, yeah, blow me out a new laptop. So they're like, what do you want? I was like, give me the Apple 17-inch with 2 gigs, SuperDrive, and whatever else you can get on it. So like, yeah, okay, great.
It's good to have a corporate expense account.
It's awesome. They're just like, I basically ordered the most expensive laptop you could buy. It's like $2,900 or something.
So
and they're like, yeah, your level of employee, you can get whatever you want. I was like, yeah, great, blow it out. So I just got this thing, and I'm checking my Gmail on a supercomputer, basically.
So you can't wait for the Intel platform with OS X.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty hot. But you know what? I got the HD camera, you know, the Sony one.
Oh.
And I've been shooting video with it, but I plugged it into my iMac. Oh, not the iMac, the Mac Mini, and the Mac Mini basically started crying. It's like, no. It's the year of HD, except for the Mac Mini. So I plugged it into my my Apple PowerBook, whatever it's called, and it ripped the HD video, and I'm watching, and Chris, like, it's like, you have 99 gig, and then like 60 seconds later, you have 93 gig. It's like, I don't know how many gig per minute to rip HD video, but it did it pretty quickly. It records it at half speed. But hey, you guys going to CES?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be good this year, huh?
I think so.
A lot of stuff going on. We've got like 9 people going.
Dear God.
Are you guys doing video again?
I'm going to, you know, I tried to do video last year. I did a little bit, and it worked okay. But you know what the problem is? It's editing the fucking video.
It sure is.
That's the fucking problem.
That's why we broadcast live.
It's just such a pain in the ass to rip it, and I'm doing it on my ThinkPad last year like a schmuck. And it's like, oh yeah, your ThinkPad hard drive goes at like 2,000 RPM. So you're, but you know what I got? I got the JVC Averio that records to a compact flash card.
Nice.
And I got the 4 gig, and it records to like an MPEG file. So basically, it's already a file. You drag and drop it, and then I guess you just have to recode it down to a smaller size. But I'm going to bring that with me, and I'm just going to carry it, do short interviews.
Yep.
Put a bumper on the front and the back, and boom. And we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, as long as you don't have to edit, you've got like no time involved there.
That's really the rub is editing. But you know, I want to try to do a. I did this a demo. We did like a little round table, and I just pointed the camera and had it rip to the hard drive directly, and it created a pretty big file. But then I cut it down and then just uploaded it. And then the other problem is when you're at a hotel, they throttle the upload speed.
Yep.
And I'm on EVDL. It's another fucking problem.
What about Starbucks, actually? When Jake and I have had to go to Starbucks for broadband, their upload speed was pretty... It was almost better than the upload speed we have at home.
You get about 70 to 90K up from Starbucks, which isn't fast.
That's much better than the hotel.
Yeah.
And I was just in Hawaii. They throttled my hotel to 30 kilobits down.
I grabbed one of those.
I'm trying to download the Apprentice finale, and it's like, yeah, I'll be ready on Tuesday. I'm like, I'll be back on my Devo.
I grabbed one of my one of those Singular cards. That's it actually does broadband. Their broadband connect 500K connection in Las Vegas. So,
really?
That's what we'll use for upload, probably.
Yeah, I got EVDO. I basically gave like everybody. I gave everybody in the company like 6 people EVDO cards, and I was like, just now we can live blog from anywhere. Don't worry about it. Boom. And that really is just like life-changing EVDO, I find.
Well, I know that it's good for backup, if anything else, or if nothing else, I should say.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, you're on Wi-Fi, and I was at DEF CON, and one of the guys from Hackaday, we tell everybody, you know, like, obviously, hacking Hackaday is, like, everybody's dream, right? Like, make us look like schmucks, because it's Hackaday, and we got hacked. So we go to DEF CON, and I tell everybody, don't log into the public Wi-Fi, right? Because the whole point of the public Wi-Fi there is to get hacked. And they sit there and hack, you know, people's passwords like that. So we set up a secure socket to the, you know, content management system, Blogsmith. And what does somebody do? They don't go to the HTTPS. They go to the HTTP. Immediately, somebody picks up the password to get into the Hackaday, and they deface it immediately. And I'm like, ugh. We knew it was going to happen. And they did. So I don't even want to be on public Wi-Fi anymore, just for the fact that everybody's scanning it. It's so easy. I downloaded a thing the other day. I haven't played with it yet, but you can download like a Wi-Fi scanner and just be picking up passwords.
Oh yeah,
crazy.
Once you're on any kind of connection and anybody sharing that connection, you're pretty much opening yourself.
Hey,
to whatever they're seeing.
Speaking of Blogsmith, when is that going to be available as a platform for people to buy?
I don't know what to do with it right now. It obviously wasn't part of the. Probably shouldn't talk about this, but fuck it. It's the Chris Perillo show. the Chris Perillo exclusive.
Come on, you're the only one listening anyway.
Yeah, so here it is. I have no idea what to do with it. Now, obviously, America Online didn't buy it. We carved it out of the deal. But America Online is the biggest client of it. So if you go on Engadget, it says powered by Blogsmith. So that's our basic deal with them, is that we get powered by on all the blogs, which is good.
The rumor is that is the best blogging software out there.
It really is. And I hired a bunch of new programmers to work on it with Brian. And we just put it on 26 servers over the last 3 days at Weblogs Inc. at AOL in their NOC. So we have, it's crazy. And we put the Memcache on it. I don't know if you guys know what that is. But basically, Memcache is this really sick software that was created actually for LiveJournal. Because remember LiveJournal kept crashing?
Yeah.
The reason was, MySQL just couldn't handle the amount of inputs because, that sounds pornographic, but LiveJournal couldn't handle it because everybody on LiveJournal writes like three-word posts. It's not like, Chris is going to write, you're parking in a, handicapped spot or, you have an SUV. It's like, that took you 5 minutes to write. Well, imagine you wrote that, in 20 different posts. It would be 20 different, entries and SQL calls. Long story short, they wrote this thing called Memcache, which you can just Google. And what it is they put the MySQL database into memory, right? It's in a cache, just like your HTML static pages would be. And then what happens is it writes large amounts of database calls at once. It took our SQL servers from, being pinned at 90% to being at 2%.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. And this is what, the big problem with Web 2.0 companies are, right? We don't raise venture capital for these companies. So you can't have a lot of servers. And you need to find a way to really get the most out of your hardware. And this thing has just made it phenomenally fast. But we moved all the bloggers over to it. It's working really, really well. We got a bunch of servers at Rackspace as well. So I'm just trying to figure out exactly what the business model should be, because we could charge for it. We could give away for free and have ads on it. I mean, there's like 10 different ways to skin the cat here. So I'm just going to give it to, some select people in the first quarter of 2006 and let them play with it. And then we'll figure out the business model after that.
See how it goes.
Yeah, because, I don't need to make money off it, at least not initially. I would like to make it, I want to keep developing it because it's kind of fun. Software development is kind of fun, You're doing it now too, right, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, with Gotta Be, which is really well done, by the way.
Well, we're still still evolving. We actually had someone submitted a rather interesting, almost hackaday-ish looking CSS file, almost like the Matrix. So it's like a black background, neon text. We haven't put it up yet. We haven't incorporated it, but now we've got the ability to do style switching.
Oh yeah, I know you did a call for designs or something.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. See if any designers out there see any ability of throwing their hat into the ring, so to speak.
We know what it's like. Is if you look at, like, Chris, you and I were journalists, right? And then we went to be publishers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, hey, you're a journalist, you start to really learn about business, you learn about what makes publishing work, and you're like, I don't need a publisher, I don't need to work at, wherever you worked or wherever I worked, I'll be my own publisher. Then it's like, okay, I'm a publisher, and, I use this software from people, and you're like, then at a certain point, you're like, well, I learned how to be a journalist, I learned how to be a publisher, fuck it, I'm going to just build my own software. And it's so funny to watch that sort of career path because we're both doing it at the same time. And actually, if you look at Kevin Rose from Dig, right? I mean, he went from being journalist to sort of publisher, doing, his video shows and stuff like that. And now he's basically doing software, right? I mean, Dig is more software than editorial in my mind.
Oh, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's he hit upon something there, that's for sure.
That site is out of control, man. It's so out of control. It's like our blog or spend all their time on Dig putting their stories on there, because if they on the our smaller blogs, you know, you get 5, 10, 20,000 pages. So it, you know, it won't move the needle on Engadget or Joystick or something like that, but it will move the needle on HDBeat. It will move the needle on one of our smaller blogs. So those guys are just obsessed with it. So like, people are writing editorial within our company that is diggable, and you know, it's like top 15 ways to get the most out of Gmail, top 17 reasons why we love Microsoft. You know, like those kind of stories, which seem to go right up the to the front page. But it's really interesting to me how Delicious showed all the promise, and then Dig just put such a beautiful front end on it, and it made all the difference in the world. And I think technically Delicious is probably more powerful than Dig, you know, in terms of its ability to handle tags and scaling and, you know, RSS feeds and all that kind of stuff. You can do more with Delicious.
Well, there's a lot more categorization.
Yeah, it almost like a different beasts. Whereas Delicious isn't really a voting, so to speak. I mean,
it doesn't have that piece, right?
Yeah, it's just different. This is more like an open source /dot Dig is.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the way I've seen it.
I think it's going to get bought by CNET in the next 6 months. That's why I put in my top prediction.
Really? You don't think Yahoo's going to go for it?
I don't know. I this is where I think it's going to go down. Dig gets bought by CNET. CNET gets bought by Yahoo.
Okay.
Or Fox Interactive, News Corp. But, you know, CNET's been on the block for so long. But I can see, I think Yahoo might not get Dig yet. You know, like, since they bought Delicious, they could build a front end on top of Delicious and have Dig, right? I mean, they just get some editors in their movie group and say, or at GameSpot or whatever content vertical, they could just say, here's Delicious, put a front end on it. They really don't need a Dig, you know? But CNET is getting their ass kicked by Dig, just like CNET has been getting their ass kicked by Engadget. And so CNET really needs to make a move. So I could definitely see CNET buying it.
Yeah, I don't know. CNET hasn't really been making any acquisitions lately.
Yeah, they seem really stagnant, huh?
Other than MP3.com.
Well, that's they haven't done much with it.
You know what it is? It's like, I think when your company gets into that mode of we're trying to sell, it just you lose all the innovation, right? Because people are like, we're out of here, you know? Somebody else's problem. And so you don't have that, like, drive that you used to have. And that was my big concern with, you know, with our deal with AOL is, you know, I wanted to make sure we still had our drive to do interesting things.
But that didn't happen.
It hasn't happened. That won't happen on my watch. But, it's certainly my biggest fear is that, you know, people become complacent. So I've been pushing people hard. We launched... So, you know, I don't know if you saw, we spun off 4 video game blogs.
Yep,
so
yep.
I'm like, guys, we have to keep, you know, charging ahead. This video game space is underserviced. Let's try some things. So we did the WoW Insider for World of Warcraft, Xbox 360, Fanboy,
yep.
DS Fanboy, and we did one other one,
so
PSP Fanboy.
When's the Second Life Fanboy coming?
Which one?
Second Life.
Oh, yeah, you know, that would be, I think... We basically looked at all the platforms. We looked at all the games, and I said, you know, do like 4 or 5 of these things. Let's look at where it is in, you know, a month or two. But if we can get them to 10,000-20,000 pages a day, right? Then you're at 300,000 to 600,000 pages. If you're monetizing at $5 a page total, which should be pretty easy to do, or doable, right?
Yep.
Then you're at, whatever, $1,500 to $3,000. Then you might be breaking even, you know, losing a little bit of money. And that's fine with us, you know.
Add
to the Joystick inventory.
At this point, and I don't know, maybe you have made comment on this, but apparently there's a big stink raised in the Google AOL deal where Google now has to display banners or graphic ads on its pages.
Yeah, well, let me tell you all the intricate details of that deal and how it went down and all the stuff that would get me fired. no. I can't talk about all that
stuff. Sure.
But, you know, the one thing I would say is, you know, everybody, when these deals happen, like, it's funny. I mean, I understand why they do it. Like, people's minds just go, like, crazy. You know, and they go to, like, this massive extreme of, like, the, you know, this is the end of the world, like Battelle was writing, Google is jumping the shark and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, hold on a second. There are smart people at AOL. There are really smart people at Google. there are really smart people at AOL as well. You know, they're not going to do something stupid, you know? Nobody's going to jeopardize their business, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah, but placing graphic ads on a Google page just almost seems, ironic.
You don't think they were going to do that at some point anyway?
You know, at some point maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they're going that way anyway, and they're going to be putting video on that page. I mean, it's just inevitable. And, you know, I think they know how to control things. So, I mean, they've been placing graphical ads on our sites through Google Ads.
Oh, sure.
They've been doing them on yours.
Sure.
So if they're doing them on our sites and they're keeping control of them, that's the way they were probably warming up the market to put it on their sites. And what I'm talking about is pure speculation. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, it's all speculation at this point until something actually happens.
Exactly. And you know, if you look at, you use Tribal Fusion or Burst or any of those?
Not anymore.
Yeah. I mean, those sites get sort of bottom of the basement, you know, ads.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, like you have to go in there and you have to click off, like, no, I don't want something flashing. No, I don't want to take over the whole screen. No, I don't want to alienate every reader I've ever, you know, spent time building an audience. You know, like, you have to check off all these things. No, I don't want a flashing iPod for free that, you know, spams people after they give their email. You know, AOL is not going to have any Google is not going to have any tolerance for that kind of nonsense. They're just not going to run those ads. I'm sure of it, you know. So I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. And I wrote just a little bit about it on my blog, just saying, you know, I got a lot of friends at Google, and so I'm excited about continuing to work with them. I mean, when we got bought, I think we had, you know, peaked out at like $3,500, $4,000 a day in Google AdSense. And that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly doesn't suck.
I love my Google. Did you try that? What's that other?
Chiquita?
Chiquita, yeah. What
yeah,
the hell's going on with that?
Chiquita, I guess. Or
Chitika.
Chitika, that's it.
They told everybody they made like $10,000, and they're like, oh, no, psych, you made two?
Yeah, I took like about a 30% hit on whatever my gross was.
It wasn't great, but as far as, you know, inventory that would otherwise go unsold, it's pretty good.
What are you RPMing? You know, how much revenue are you getting per page?
Oh, nothing. You know,
a dollar or something?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, from Chitika, and I think that's how you pronounce
Chiquita?
It. Chitika. Yeah, it's really
strange.
It's
not strange. A banana.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something. It doesn't surprise me that they, you know, got the revenue so wrong. If you pick a name like Chiquita,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you name your company something that nobody can pronounce.
Well, I think it was an interesting premise, and I think I
like the execution.
Well, yeah, and as far as any comparison engines and affiliate revenue is concerned, I think I've made more with them than I have with any other comparison engine in the longest time. So they're certainly doing something right. I think the discrepancy comes in where you have audited inventory and unaudited inventory. And the unaudited inventory, unfortunately, is what they show you. So you see, oh, I'm making this much a day. And then it actually rolls through. They say, well, no, you actually made only this much. And
well, see, Google really does a live audit, so you're not really getting you're not getting as fake of numbers from
it's more
so
realistic
stats. And
so what
would be the stuff that would be getting pulled out? Is that like a spider?
I think it's
spidering your site.
I think the stuff that gets pulled out is anything that came from an Asian IP address, which is probably unfair, but I think that was sort of the implied what they're pulling out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
what's up? Advertisers don't want to pay for Asian
click fraud.
Eyeballs?
Well,
click fraud.
Yeah, click fraud. Because I mean,
you mean those 800 people that we hired in Shenzhen clicking on our site? That's illegal?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
I don't want to do that.
Paying those guys $3 a month.
Well, you know, having what was I running there before? I think I was just running a plain old, like, an affiliate program. And then when I put that in there, we made a few thousand in a month for just running something that was in one single space that was making really nothing before. So, you know, I was pretty happy with those results. You know, something is, in many cases, better than nothing. And then I've always seen it as something that's kind of cool as well. I mean, if you have it targeted to the page, then, you know, if you're there to read something, then you find out about the product, you get the image, and then you could search for more products right there without leaving the page. So it's the execution, as you said, I think was pretty smart, pretty unique.
Now, when people click from the tab to tab to tab, you don't get any money.
No.
No.
You only get it if they click on the ad or Yeah, if they click through, basically.
That sort of makes sense to me. I mean, I guess it's like people are window shopping. It's like they're looking for the catalog, and if they take the phone call,
pretty much,
you know, they go from there.
Well, and the thing that I can't tell about it is it looks like it's sort of a unique implementation of like a Price Grabber or a Shopping.com type site.
Yeah, and we never put those on Engadget. We could have made so much money, and I just felt like when you put that on the site, I feel like people start to think that you're writing about stuff to get that click. You know, like the same way about Amazon. And I'm a little bit of a nutcase about the editorial integrity thing or whatever. But I just didn't want Engadget or Tua or whatever, or Joystick, to be, like, associated with, like, we're trying to close the sale. So, like, Peter's got a thing on Engadget. He never talks about the merchants. You know, he doesn't tell you go to buy it at Amazon or go to buy it here. We just sort of try to stay pure and just talk about the product, and then you guys know what to do.
See,
I think I'm an idiot. But.
No, I haven't done much of that either, just because, well, by and large, you don't make much from it. I mean, unless it's like something extremely targeted. And if it's a case like linking to Amazon, everybody and their grandmother has an Amazon affiliate program. So what's the point of you putting your link in there? Everybody's going to click on their own link or go to their own link or find it on their own. So I just found, and then even when, if they do come through you, unless the traffic is right and you're selling the right products or the people are clicking or buying the right products, you really make nothing. I mean, literally nothing with an Amazon affiliate program.
You know, the other problem is people who come to our site are really sophisticated people, and they're not going to click, go to Amazon and buy a $1,000 item. They're going to click, go to Amazon, look at the $1,000 item. Then they're going to go to 17 different sites and read
comparison.
Reviews. They're going to go to Technorati and search for the tag, you know, and then 3 weeks later, after they've talked to their friends and done a couple blog posts about it, then they're going to buy it. And they're going to go to Frugal and buy it, you know, based on something there. And you're going to get nothing. It's like it's almost like your readers are so sophisticated. We had to train advertisers on Engadget and some of our sites about that. And you know what they did was they found that on the car site, Autoblog, they found that like 40 or 50% of the people who had clicked through came back to Suzuki or whatever it was within the next 30 days, which was just like the highest ranking they'd ever have. But it makes sense, right? Like, I saw the Suzuki ad, I clicked on it, I'm a sophisticated car person, you know, I'm obsessed with cars. I'm going to go visit the site again, but I'm not going to go, you know, request a test drive the second I go to the site. I'm going to mull it over and think about it, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, like I said, I think it's better than most of the alternatives in the comparison shopping affiliate space. And I think as far as comparison shopping engines that one could put on their site, that would probably be the one I'd still recommend, even with the big discrepancies between the audited and unaudited revenue.
Hey, so one more question for you. What's going on with the next GNOME deck?
Good question.
It was such a good event.
Yeah.
Like, I have to say, if I pick my favorite, like, two or three events of last year, it would be the D conference, where I got to spend half an hour talking to Steve Jobs and 20 minutes talking to Bill Gates. And Steve Jobs told me he reads Engadget every day. That was, like, number one. Sorry, you can't beat that. But right behind that was GNOME Deck.
That's pretty good.
And you had really good, and it wasn't like you had Steve Jobs there or anything like that. But you actually, what I love about your conference and the one you did in Reno is that you actually have people who build shit. And, you know, like when you're the CEO of the company, like you get really distanced from that, and you get all these marketing people and these CEOs on message. But GNOME Dex is always like the actual people who build stuff and who know what, like, what's going on the fringe. And it's not as pretentious as ETAC, which is always like, let's have Cory Doctorow on stage, you know, talking about... you know, how we have to stand up and fight against DRM. And I'm like, dude, I could just, you know, I can buy a hard drive-based or a flash-based MP3 player from somebody other than Apple. I don't need to, like, march on Washington. But anyway, that's my sidetrack. So what is going on with the next...
Well, I can tell you...
Where is it? What's
the story? It's still going to be in Seattle. It's going to be in the same place, same venue, Bell Harbor.
That was a great venue, actually. Very cool.
Yeah, It was really good. The only thing we struggled with was broadband, which you
remember. Yeah, of course. Every conference is having that problem.
Well, this year we told them we don't want to have the screw-ups that we had the first day. The second day that we had GNOME Dex, you might remember the broadband situation was a little nicer, so we're going to go with the whole weekend being like the second day, so it's going to be better balanced. We waited on them. We asked them specifically, could we add, you know, more, you know, T1s? Because they're going to use all the bandwidth that you could throw at them. And they said, you know, let's check it. Let's find out. And they went and they talked to whoever their provider was, and they came back and said, yeah, it's going to be, you know, an extra $100 a head. It's like, you know, I just didn't want to pass that on. You know, as far as like an extra T1, you know, I didn't want to pass that cost on to the people who come. So I said, no, that's fine. Let's stick with what we had the second day, the two T1s. Let's balance it out. Let's be sure we're ready for it this time. And I'm going to recommend essentially that everybody bring their own EVDO or, you know, Edge or whatever cards. You know, it's kind of either backup or just to kind of, you know, alleviate some of the congestion, kind of alleviate.
You know
that.
What I'll do is we have these, you know, the junction box. You plug your EVDO card into a box, and then it creates a Wi-Fi network.
Oh yeah.
So we have two of these things. It's called the junction box. You can search for it on Engadget, but they're like absurdly expensive, like $800 or $900. But when we go to events, it's one of our little secrets. Like we just blow out. We take the box out. We put one EVDO card in it, and all seven of our editors are on our private Wi-Fi network, you know?
Yeah.
So we have this, like, portable Wi-Fi network wherever we go. And when we were at CES last year, we had it, and it was, like, a lifesaver because, in the press room, it's like, oh, Wi-Fi's down again, you know? Everybody doesn't work for 2 hours. And we're like, boom, blowing out 60 posts a day or whatever.
Yeah.
But can't they just throw in a DSL line as a backup?
You know,
or is it just, like, this is all mobbed up? Like,
yeah, we went through so many... I'm happy that we're going to do it, and we've got the weekend. I believe the contract hasn't been signed. That's what we've been waiting on. We don't want to like say something and then have something accidentally get screwed up. But we're 99% there. The weekend of I think June 30th through July 2nd.
Very nice.
Yeah,
so
it's
soon.
Yeah, it's on the cusp. So it'll be 6 months in the summer. Seemed to be a good time for Seattle.
And you can do Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, well, Thursday night to. Through Saturday. Well, I don't know.
People will do the Sunday brunch.
Yeah, and there may be something. Yeah, if people want to arrange their own things on Sunday, that's great. That's cool. I don't know if we're going to be planning anything yet, but it's our hope that you know, we've already gotten quite a few nibbles on sponsorship, so I'm sure we'll be taking care of that. But I'll be rolling out the registration for it probably within the next couple of weeks. Oh, Christmas, unfortunately, and the holidays slow everything down. And the person that we've been working with, the salesperson, is leaving. And so we haven't been able to get everything like straightened out and ready to go as quickly as I would have liked to or Ponzi would have liked to. But that's the general that's the
Thank
gist
God
of it.
You have Ponzi, man.
Oh, yeah.
Because you wouldn't get any of this done.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, seriously, she's taking your game to a whole nother level.
I agree. I concur.
And so what do you got? You trying to get Mark Cuban and Mark Andreessen at the event?
Mark Andreessen, I'm sure. I'm not sure about Mark Cuban. I'd hate to... See, this is the thing that... I've got a few people in my head of who I'd like to invite. Having met Stephen Page from the Bare Naked Ladies... This past year, really cool guy, down to earth, did his independent album. I think he would make just an excellent speaker on media, and I mean the mainstream media versus, you know, what's happening with podcasting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He had some unique opinions, or at least I thought were unique opinions when we interviewed him a few months ago in Seattle. But there are, you know, a few other names in my head. But I think we've boiled it down to the theme is going to be a higher resolution. So whatever the hell that means, a higher resolution.
See, right, I really like to see.
So the same topics, but taking them to another level is how I interpret that.
Well, yeah, you know, I'd also like to do a little more with you know, some of the things that are happening within the digital camera realm, HD TV realm, maybe a little gaming. I mean, there's a lot that could happen. I just don't know. I don't know what it's going to be until
you know,
I see what's there.
The one format that never happens at these events is. Debates.
Yeah.
I tried.
I mean, come on. I had Dave Weiner and Adam Curry, like the argument of the year.
And I have to say that was great.
And nothing happened.
I know. And like Dave Weiner's like, oh, let me wait till after, and then I'm going to blow out all these blog posts.
Yeah.
And I just rip on Adam Curry. I, you know, it's so funny, those two guys, because like I know both of those guys, and I like both of those guys, and they're both obviously really smart in different ways. Like one, you know, obviously, you know, Dave is this mad scientist who's just brilliant, but maybe doesn't have the polish and the packaging sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and why should he? Because he's so focused on what matters And then you have Adam Curry, who's just, you know, puts this incredibly great package around things. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean, he does, you know, packaging is important. He's, you know, he puts a good, you know, his podcast is well produced, and that's not a dig. It's, you know, he's still got substance on it, but that's why it's done well, I think. You couldn't have, like, two more different guys, but the fact that they were, like, tied at the hip and had this, like, breakup, it's like this, it was almost like they were a good couple, you know?
Yeah.
They complimented each other. And I don't know, man, reading that last Dave Weiner post where it's like, my intellectual property was leveraged to his company, and, man, if I was even, if I was Sequoia and Quanah Perkins, I'd be going, oh, Jesus. You know, like, what if this guy makes a claim down the road? And
well, I'll obviously invite both of them to come back. I don't know if as official presenters.
Right.
But, yeah, I'd love to have debate types of scenarios. I'd also like to mix a little bit of what they do at Demo, where you've got a few minutes to show off something.
Demo or die.
Yeah. And
I like that.
In whether it's something you're passionate about or something that you're actually building. So there's probably going to be elements of a lot of things. The one reason I'm reluctant to certain names, like you mentioned Cory Doctorow or like Mark Cuban.
I'm so over Cory Doctorow.
Well, they're O'Reilly staples. And, you know, I think O'Reilly puts on
it's
great
O'Reilly
conferences.
Mafia.
Right. And
I don't
want to be.
Mark Cuban's not really an
O'Reilly. Well,
state.
Yeah.
No, Mark
come
Cuban's
on.
Not an O'Reilly guy.
He's well,
not, he
yeah.
He's a WebLogic
web
guy.
2.0 thing, but he's not like an O'Reilly's camper.
And I'm
the
still.
The O'Reilly camp is John Battelle, Cory Doctorow, Movable Type, you know, Six Apart, and Battelle and whatever.
Yeah.
And how do you like the fact that, like, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think WebLogic thing did a pretty good job, right, over the last 2 years?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you would say it was, I don't know, if you said Web 2.0 company and I asked you to make a list of 10, we might be on that list, right?
Well, okay, here's the thing, Jason. I don't believe in Web 2.0.
But even still, the last two, he did two Web 2.0 conferences, right?
Right. Now, I mean, as far as people who are, like, doing something, you know, and still doing something, yes, I would consider WebLogs Inc. right in there.
Both times.
Yeah.
Both times, they shut me out of both events in terms of speaking. And then for both ETECs, shut me out of both.
You know why? You don't have any Ajax. That's, you know, you need
you know
Ajax.
You know what it is? I tell you what it is. Battelle, you want the backstory or no?
Why not?
Because I really don't care. I can alienate these guys because they hate me anyway. But, you know, obviously Battelle is launching Federated Media.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been going around telling everybody this is the better version of WebLogs Inc., right? You know, you own your content. It's your brand. We just sell your ads, blah, blah, blah. That's how he pitches it. And I got that. Two different people told me that's the way he pitched it, and he told me that's the way he pitched it as a better WebLogs Inc. But, of course, that was the original idea for WebLogs Inc. If you remember, when we started, and I explained the idea to you to get your advice on it when I started, it was going to be this, like, revenue-sharing thing. And we just changed it because we couldn't find anybody who wanted that. So, anyway, it's like, if you compete with John Battelle, you're not going to get your shot, basically. And, of course, Battelle will deny that or whatever, but it was basically, ever since he decided he was going to get in the game, WebLogs Inc. was not going to have a spot. And then at this last one, he had the Citizens Media, monetizing Citizen Media panel. And who does he have on it? Mina Trott, right?
Mm.
Who, like, we haven't heard 1,000 times talk about how we have to be nice to each other, or whatever her nonsense was at the Web 2.0. Mark Fletcher, good guy, right? Blogline.
Yep, yep,
but
yep.
Bloglines hasn't changed in 2 years. And we've all heard him speak a million times. And you know, Chris from Topics.net, which is actually a really interesting site and a good guy. So I was like, hey, why don't you guys have me on the panel? And he's like, no, we don't want to talk. We want to talk about Citizens Media from a tools perspective. I was like, what? Picks and shovels? And so then, you know, the AOL deal gets announced the night before the rumor spreads that, you know, off of paid content. And so I email them. I'm like, hey. And so they email me back, and they're like, if you had told us about this under embargo, we would have let you be on the panel. And I was like, well, I really wasn't at liberty. It's a publicly traded company, right? So, yeah, but I'm like, you know, you only have three people in that panel, so why don't you add me? And they write me back, and they go, oh, it's too late to add somebody.
Dear God.
And I'm like, by the way, you added these three people. They added three people to the program. And they're like, yeah, we can't add anybody to that panel. I'm like, you had a, you know, three's enough.
See,
I was like,
see,
you had six people. You have six people on the panel before it.
And you know the pain of doing a conference. You know that pain.
Yeah. I'm a good speaker, though, right?
Yeah, no, entertain people? No one doubt you. Honestly,
and, I bring it.
Yeah, not to take away from the panelist, I guess. And it wasn't really a panel; it was more of a discussion type of interaction thing. Yeah, I think you were definitely the how should I say this? The paprika.
Spice to it. You had two people who were really qualified about it. You know. And I added a little real world perspective, but I thought that was the balance.
And
it
was, and it needed to be there. And so, no, it certainly there was no argument.
It makes me crazy. You know,
trust me, I know. So
how do you just? It's like, and I don't know. They it's such the thing I don't like about it is the total hypocrisy. You know,
yeah.
Because Battelle and O'Reilly are like, oh, it's all about open and all this kind of stuff. And you know what they were really upset about me about? They were really upset about Hackaday. We launched that right before they did Make.
Oh.
And then we had this whole battle over PT, which never really came out into the public, but it got kind of hairy because we had a non-compete with PT, and it almost turned into a whole big legal thing, and we dropped it, whatever. And PT's a great guy.
Oh, yeah. I always try to play, you know, on the sidelines. I hate throwing myself into the middle of any kind of political battle. And in doing a conference, I find that, unfortunately, I get thrown into a political battle. But it's something that, you know, I don't want to take away from anything that anybody else is doing. We're going up against, that week is Supernova in, of course, that's still in San Francisco. And I don't think we're really in the same
space. People aren't going to go to one or the other, right? Supernova's going to be the same days?
Well, no, it's not the same days. There's some people, though, who would choose one over the other. And so, this is the way I've done Gnome Dex, you know, from the beginning, is I want to make it a conference that I want to go to. So everything that gets built up around it, no matter what we throw in, you know, it'll be good. And this past year was just, I mean, Gnome Dex 5, you were there, has done a lot for us. I mean, we've got, I think we'll have even more support from the people that we were hoping to get support from last year. And,
I can help, you know, if you want a quote or something like that.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Like one of the best conferences, one of the top three conferences I've been to in the last 3 years.
Well, you're saying it. We're recording this audio, so that could come back
there
and haunt you.
Yeah, there you go. It's a promo. Hey, this is Jason Telecanis of Weblogs, Inc., and I just want to say, hey, come to Gnome Dex. It's dope. I played poker with Will Wheaton until 5 in the morning.
Yeah, that's right.
It was a blast.
That was right.
See, now that's the kind of thing that actually discourages bosses from letting their employees come.
I mean, I learned really practical ways to save money and build value for my company.
So what do you just you just didn't have any work to do tonight, so you called us up.
You know what? You know, I was in Blog Lines, and you're a smart guy. I'm going through my feeds. I see Boom, Chris Perlow's got a live show. And you make it really simple. So you're a savvy dude. You put the live stream there. So
yep,
I was like, fine, I'll click the live stream. I you didn't say what time, but I said, fuck it, let me just click the stream and see what happens. Boom, I click the stream, you're on. And I'm like, you know what? I feel like calling in to talk to Chris.
It's easy.
We don't see each other enough, and I like talking to you because you know your shit, and but you guys always put me through.
Oh, yeah, of course we put you through.
Yeah.
You like, you know, you go right to the top.
I like that.
And then plus we'll take the audio that we recorded and actually throw it on the site for people to download. So if they missed the live
stream, really?
People can
just record it? People going to hear what I had to say?
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. Pretty much.
That's fine with me. You know what? At this point, I've alienated so many people. I just
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't even matter.
It doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter.
I really don't care.
So I certainly appreciate you calling in.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I'll let you get back to the show. I mean, I'm sure you guys have topics and stuff like that. And no other questions for me or anything?
Yeah, not at this point.
No, I mean...
Other than, I guess you don't have an Xbox 360, so that kind of
rolls out
that question.
I don't, but, you know, there's the last flight on Southwest is at 8:45, so that means I can make it to your house at about 10.
You can get it.
And if we pull an all-nighter, Ponzi doesn't mind, right? She'll be cooking food.
Yeah, she'll be in the other room, you know.
So she'll be making some good food for Christmas, and we can do like a 24-hour marathon.
That sounds good.
That sounds hot. All right, guys.
All right, take care.
I'll listen in.
Thanks, Jason.
Cheers, bye.
Talk here. All right. Thank you, Jason Calacanis. That was a wonderful surprise. I'm surprised.
Always good to hear from Jason.
Yeah, Jason Calacanis just called in, and we chatted for about 45 minutes.
Excellent.
Or so. So, anyway, the guests are here, the official guests, as opposed to our unofficial guests like Jason. Liz Lawley has been here for a little while. They've been in the other room playing the Xbox 360, and Robert Scoble is here right now.
And Scoble has the new phone now, or no, this is Chris's phone.
This is my phone.
That's his phone. But
keeping up with the furloughs.
But I'm thinking I'm headed to get that phone tomorrow.
I want to catch up with Robert here for a second. So do you have Leo and Jeremy's content queued up?
No, I sure don't, because you should probably take the call that's on the line.
Oh,
right,
there's
now
a call on the line. Well,
yeah,
I did,
yeah, if you pulled up the
I
little
did not
thing,
know that.
You'd know that.
I did not know that. There's a call. Okay. Arthur. Arthur?
Hi.
Is it Arthur?
It's Arthur.
Okay. Hello.
Hey, Chris.
What can I do you for?
Well, first of all, I want to say I first saw you in Call for Help on text.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And did you see that G4 just canceled Call for Help again?
No.
Yeah. They're yanking it off the air again. So Jake and I are kicking around maybe even just doing our own Call for Help and doing it on the internet. Maybe we'll have to do it in HD, though.
Yeah.
On the internet?
Yeah, on the internet.
Yeah.
We'll just throw it on in BitTorrent, you know, and people will download it.
They'll wait like 3 weeks.
That's right.
Hey, I'll wait 3 weeks to see Chris again. That's
see,
great.
There you go.
I will say, you helped restore my faith in tech.
Oh,
I was
good.
Getting kind of bored of it.
Yeah, every once in a while, there comes moments where I get a little bored as well, and then things like the Xbox 360 come around, and it's like, ooh, yeah. I'm excited again.
I would love to be excited for the Xbox 360, and the store nipping near me actually has it, but I don't have the money.
No!
No, someone... I have eight nephews and nieces. They got the money. Christmas got the money.
Oh, man. So you know where you can get an Xbox 60 right now.
I know I can get it. I literally... Five blocks away.
Buy it on spec. Okay, this is what you do. Buy it on... Just buy it. Max yourself. eBay it. You can make twice the amount of money. You can make money from it. It's like... printing money. You're printing money with the Xbox 360. That's what it is. Robert Scoble would buy it from you. It's a license to print money is the Xbox 360 right now. In another, you know, month or two when they're all everywhere, they're not worth anything. But right now, it's gold.
No, I gotta stay away. No.
All right. So wait, where are you calling from, Arthur?
I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
New York, dude. Sorry, it's in Brooklyn, New York. That's a long drive.
When are you going to bring No Nets down here?
That's a good question. No, Ponzi loves New York, and she's asked if we can do Gnome Dex there. A few issues. Number one, we don't have a base of operations in New York, number one. Number two, cost. And New York is anything but cheap, if we were to do it, you know, the right way. So we're probably going to have to wait until we partner with another company or get, you know, bought by another company to be able to take it to other cities beyond where we live.
Yep.
So maybe. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, but...
you know what? I had to add this question. And now I also have to say, I doubt you'll remember it, but I actually bought you a Spaceballs DVD.
You did?
Years ago, yeah.
I've still got it on my shelf then.
Yeah, I got it on your wish list from Amazon. I said, okay, I got to buy this guy. I just, like, the first couple times I saw you, I said, this guy's a nut, and I love him, and he's just fun. I gotta get him something.
Yeah, I still have it on my shelf somewhere. Oh, I see it. I see it right there, the Spaceballs DVD. I see it. So that's thank you.
No problem.
So I can thank you in voice format.
You thank me in locker gnome format, too.
Yeah,
it's
fantastic.
Good either way.
Good. So, good to hear.
I do actually have a question.
Oh, okay.
Other than saying you're wonderful and great.
Oh, and by the way, you're entered to win tonight's prize just by calling in.
Oh, cool. So. I didn't know there was a prize.
Yeah, we give away prizes every week for the people out of everybody who calls in, one random person gets a prize. So I think tonight we're giving away a PSP, so you could very well get a PSP tonight.
Oh, that's awesome.
So if you know anybody who wants to get a PSP, just tell them to call in the Chris Perillo Show, and we pretty much give one away every week.
Yeah, I should call my brother. He'll cry if he got it.
Okay, so you say you have a legitimate question.
I have a legitimate question.
I dare you to ask me.
I will do it. my question is, I'm looking for just a nice piece of software that will just generally tune up a PC. Just make everything run a little cleaner, a little faster. I have like 500 little programs that I take to clients' houses to clean up their PCs. So I'm looking for not necessarily an all-one for everything, but something that will just at least perk it up a little.
Good question. And unfortunately, I'm still struggling to find that same piece of software. In the beginning, I mean, when I say in the beginning, back in the early days of Windows 3.1 in 95, the software that was out there, I mean, it really made a difference between running it and not running it. And I found that over time, running utilities that allegedly optimize sometimes actually degrade performance. And the biggest offender of this is the Norton or Symantec suite of products. I would wholeheartedly recommend against using anything with the word Norton or Symantec on it. Wholeheartedly. It's, like I said, in the beginning, it was great, and you needed the software because the optimizations really weren't built in. Well, now here we are years later, and think about the kind of hardware that's out there right now. Really hasn't evolved that much in the past couple of years. Windows XP, you know, it's been what it is since 2001 for the most part. I mean, of course, you've got Service Pack 2 that was released, and that's made some small optimizations, but of course, nothing in speed. In fact, there's a performance degradation with XP compared to, like, a Windows 2000. There's more stuff going on in XP, and it's made the computer slower. So you can't really throw software on top of software to try to make it go faster anymore. I mean, there are claims that say, yes, you got to do this, this, and this. And honestly, that's all they are, just claims. I've yet to see any, like, software just blow me away and say, no, just try it. You'll be twice as fast. You'll be this. No, you're not going to. Even if you were twice as fast, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to see the difference. You know, it's honestly, XP does enough optimizing on its own if you have XP. Now, if you've got another, you know, an older version of Windows, yeah, like 98 was really the last time you had to run any optimizations on it. You know, 2000 was pretty good to begin with. I mean, it's speed optimized. You know, for XP, you know, there's nothing really out there that's, I mean, an all-in-one software package or a really good piece of software that's going to make it a better system than what it is the way it is. There are certain things that you can do to make it a little more responsive, but as far as software that's going to do it for you automatically, I've really yet to find any comprehensive one. Now, that being said, I've got a couple of recommendations.
Okay.
First of all, Disk Keeper. You've got a defragger that's built into Windows XP and Windows 2000, which is based on an old version of Disk Keeper. They've just released 10.0 with their 10th anniversary, and they've done a lot of work on it. I mean, the UI is just absolutely amazing. It blows me away. And they've got another feature in there that re-optimizes your optimizations. And I realize it sounds so stupid, but
re-optimizing your optimizations.
It's weird. And this is the easiest way I can explain it. It's called iFast technology. And you defrag normally, you've got your regular schedule, and then what the defrag program will do is look at what you've done, look at your usage patterns, and then go through and then defrag again and optimize it for speed. So over time, in theory, it's not making it faster, but it's just moving the data so that if it's something you get too often, it can get to it faster because it puts it at the right place on the disk.
Like
so
getting to my podcast data faster.
Yeah. Well, now that may not be the case. It's more of
saying, like, in general. Yeah.
Well, it would be more of persistent data. So it would be a file that you had on your operating system that it was constantly accessing. So it wouldn't necessarily be something that you just download and to get to it quicker. It'd be more of something that a program always accessed or a file that was always on your system that you accessed frequently. It would just know. It would track and say, so you're accessing this file a lot. Let me move it to a different space on the disk. You can get to it quicker, and you'll be happy. And so I can say that I think that number one, their defragging is happening automatically. Going with the stock default defragger in Windows, I think is fine. But if you can and if you want to, I'd recommend upgrading to a version of Disk Keeper that had the iFast technology. And they've got, like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 versions of it now. Like, we've got, like, a pro, a home, a pro premium. I mean, like I said, you can go through the website. You can download a demo. You can try it for yourself. I would recommend it. You're not going to see – now, that's – like I said, you're not going to see these things, like, over – like, instantly. I mean, there were some tweaks in Windows 3.1 and 95 and 98 that as soon as you applied the tweak, it was just like, whoa, dude, this is so much better. I can see the difference. I've yet to find a tweak like that for Windows XP. So you're not going to find that instantaneous, like, instant gratification with something like a defragger, like Disk Keeper. But you will find that over time your performance should be better.
Okay.
That's one thing I would recommend. Another thing I would recommend is a program called Cashman. It's a piece of shareware. I believe OuterTech.com. Outer, as in outertech.com. I was thinking innie and outie, but outie doesn't exactly work, because I was thinking, you know, like belly button, but that, anyway. So, Cashman, C-A-C-H-E-M-A-N, is program, a utility that runs in the background and does Windows cache optimizations for you on the fly. And I found that, you know, at one time, you know, running it, and I haven't been running it as regularly as I used to, because quite honestly, I didn't see that much of a difference over time. And I think it's the faster your machine gets and the more you, you know, put into it, like, you know, faster hard disk, faster RAM, a lot of these programs really don't make much sense. You know, it, but CacheMan could help you optimize if you've got a slower hard disk, if you've got, you know, slower RAM, and you're trying to optimize as much as you possibly can, or not necessarily just slower RAM, just less RAM, then the a program like CacheMan would, you know, do you just fine. And, of course, that also begs the question before I get on to my third recommendation, how much RAM you have in your system. And I don't know if this is a direct question or just kind of a question to throw out there.
Well, I'm just, you know, for my own system, I have a gig.
Okay. So. You know, and see,
so
that's what I'm saying.
Pretty good.
You know, when you had like 128 megabytes of RAM, I mean, all these things needed to happen. But when you get to a gig, I mean, you can even move to 2 gig, and you may see some difference, but probably not a lot of difference. Going from 512 to a gig is a big leap these days. With the software that's out there, going from a gig to 2 gig, yeah, it's a good performance gain. But you know, if you got room for it, sure.
If I had room for it, I would. But you know what? I don't see any use for it at the moment.
Yeah, honestly, it's something you could do. Doesn't necessarily need to be the thing you need to do. If you've got a gig, I think you're, for the most part, you're fine. But my third recommendation, and probably my strongest one out of all of these, it's a piece of freeware from one of my favorite freeware developers ever, Mark Thompson from Analog X.
Oh, Analog X.
Yeah, you know him. Yeah.
Yep.
In fact, he announced this program on Call for Help, the Helpathon, the one that I did.
You went nuts for that one. That was great.
No, it was the coolest thing because it's called Fast Cache, and I'm running it to this day. I'm running it. And there's very few utilities that I run in the background, but this is one of them. And what it does is it acts as a DNS caching, I guess, system. So when you visit a web page and you see the little, at least in Internet Explorer, you see website found waiting for a reply.
Yeah.
Well, what it had to do is it had to figure out the machine's IP address, and that IP address had to be coordinated with the DNS or the domain name that's associated with it. And all of that happens the way it happens. Is it has to look up for these domain names pretty much all the time. I mean, there's some amount of cache that Windows has, but it's not a persistent cache. So you'll go to a website like google.com, and it'll say, here's the IP address, or looking for 209.42.whatever, and then it'll say, website found, waiting for reply, the page loads, and it's fine. And when I first started running this, I was saying, Mark, this is just, I'm not seeing any difference at all. He says, yeah, you're not seeing any difference, but look at the stats. And I looked at the stats. Here, Jake, hang on just a second. Okay, I got to run to the other room and look at my current stats. Talk to Arthur for a second.
All right, so Chris is going to run to the other room, I guess, and check his stats on his memcache, to see how much time he's saved in the last year.
Oh, good for him. So how's everything there, Jake?
Everything here's great.
Good. It's actually great talking to you guys, because I've been reading Locker Room for years, and then you moved away, and I got your newsletter separately.
Yeah.
So it's it's kind of like a fanboy moment for me. Like, you know, I'm like, oh my god, you know.
Cool.
Cool.
So is Chris answering your question effectively here?
Yeah, he's asking. You know what, I wasn't sure if there was a one-piece software or all this stuff out there, but it's always good to get just recommendations, mess around with things, see what I can make faster.
Okay, Arthur, I'm back.
Yes.
I had to look at that. In running it for the past 2 years, now this is just, I've only been counting the past 2 years of stats. I lost earlier stuff because I lost the data. I have saved over 2 days and 7 hours of my life.
Not good.
So it's incremental. It's something that's small, but I have saved 2 days of my life on internet surfing using Fast Cache over just not using it at all.
Of course, he's lost about 3 weeks to the Xbox 360, so...
It evens out. So, Arthur, what I'm saying is Fast Cache. Get it. It acts as, like I said, it's like a DNS proxy or a caching tool that makes these lookups like almost instantaneous. Like, you go to the website the first time, it says, okay, it's got to do the lookup. Then it caches that, keeps it in a file. So when it needs to go back to it again, it's like, so much quicker because it doesn't have to do the lookup. It knows where it's going. And it's the easiest, quickest, simplest utility to use. I mean, it just for the most part, after tweaking it the first time, it just works. And I've saved, literally, more than that in my life of using FastCache, 2 days and 7 hours. That's a lot of time. That's like over, that's 56 hours of my life, or approximately, that I've saved. Or incrementally, like seconds and seconds. All those seconds add up. It's like the movie Office Space. You know, the skimming of the pennies? It's the exact same thing when you're talking about DNS speedups. So it's not, you know, a speed optimization necessarily. You'd think like a disk optimization or RAM optimization. But it's an internet optimization that many people don't do. I'd recommend wholeheartedly getting FastCache. Freeware, analogx.com. Totally recommend it.
I got it.
So does
it down.
That gives you a little bit of direction now.
Yeah, that gives me a little bit of direction. Hopefully I can speed up some of my friends' and clients' computers so they don't call me as much.
There you go.
And, thank you.
Well, thank you, Arthur.
It was great talking to you.
Yeah, and I'll have to watch Spaceballs again and think of you.
Yeah, watch Spaceballs, think of me, play Xbox 360, and then mourn I can't get it.
Yes. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's no problem.
All right.
Just, you know, when I do get it, I expect your gamer score to be really high.
Oh. Well, hopefully it will be high. Hang on.
Come on.
No. Well, no, my gamer score I think right now is like 680 or 860 or something like that. Right now, I've been working on it.
Obviously, you didn't play Madden for the hour.
No, I didn't. I don't have Madden. I'm gonna have to rent Madden to get that many points, I think. So hopefully it will that'll happen after the holidays when everything calms down. I don't think I'm into buying Madden. I'm not gonna spend anything on a sports game. I'm not a sports fanatic, so not even for the points. I'll just rent it for a weekend and then get the points and then take it back.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Arthur.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Good talking to you.
You too.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye. So now we've got a few of our friends, Leo and Jeremy and the whole crew that are going to step in, and then we'll come back speaking with one of my friends, Robert Scobel, who's just fooling around with his phone that he got after he saw my phone, and now he's taking pictures and putting them on Flickr from the phone. And anyway, we're gonna hang in there. We'll be back in a second.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.